one reason I don't like this song.
Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Dave, Minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 10, 2016, or it's Tishri 10, 2020. We will start our second service on this day of atonement with a song entitled, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing, in my heart to sing thy grace, streams of mercy never ceasing, all for songs of loudest praise. Teach me some melodious sonnet, sung by flaming tongues above. Praise a mountain fixed upon it, Mount of thy redeeming love. Here I raise mine Ebenezer, hither by thy help I'm come. And I hope by thy good pleasure, safely to arrive at home. Joshua sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of yore. He to rescue me from danger interposed his precious blood. Oh, to grace how great a debtor daily I'm constrained to be. Let thy goodness like a fetter bind my wandering heart to thee. Prone to wonder, now I feel it, prone to leave the one I love. Here's my heart, oh, take and seal it for thy choice above. The Tabernacle and Its Services, Chapter 30, Patriarchs and Prophets by Ellen G. White. For the command was communicated unto Moses while in the mount with Yahweh, let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. And full directions that were given for the construction of the tabernacle. By the apostasy the Israelites forfeited the blessing of the divine presence, and for the time rendered impossible the erection of a sanctuary for Yahweh among them. But after they were again taken into favor with heaven, the great leader proceeded to execute the divine command. It says, the chosen men were especially endowed by Yahweh with skill and wisdom for the construction of the sacred building. And further, Yahweh himself gave unto Moses the plan of that structure with the particular directions as to its size and form. The materials to be employed and every article of the furniture which it was to contain. For the holy places made with the hands were to be the figures of the true, patterns of things in the heavens, a miniature representation of the heavenly temple, for Yahshua, our great high priest, after offering his life as a sacrifice, was to minister in the sinner's behalf. Yahweh presented before Moses in the mount a view of the heavenly sanctuary, and commanded him to make all things according unto the pattern shown him. All these directions were carefully recorded by Moses. He communicated them to the leaders of the people. For the building of the sanctuary, great and expensive, preparations were necessary. A large amount of the most precious and costly material was required. Yet the Yahweh accepted only free will offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, you shall take my offering, was the divine command repeated by Moses to the congregation. Devotion to Yahweh and a spirit of sacrifice were the first requisites in the preparing a dwelling place for the Most High. All the people responded with one accord. They came, everyone whose heart stirred him up, and everyone whom his spirit was made willing, and they brought the Yahweh's offering unto the work of the tabernacle of the congregation, and for all his service, and for the holy garments. And they came, both men and women, as many as were willing hearted, and brought bracelets, and earrings, and rings, and tablets, all jewels of gold, and every man that offered an offering of gold unto the Yahweh. And every man with whom was found blue and purple and scarlet and fine linen and goat's hair and ram's skin dyed red and seal skins brought them. Everyone that did offer an offering of silver and brass brought the Yahweh's offering, and every man with whom was found acacia wood for any work of the service brought it. And all the women that were wise-hearted did spin with their hands and brought that which they had spun, the blue and the purple, the scarlet and the fine linen. And all the women whose hearts stirred them up in wisdom spun the goat's hair. And the rulers brought the onyx stones and the stones to be set for the ephod and for the breastplate and the spice and the oil for the light and for the anointed oil and for the sweet incense. While the building of the sanctuary was in progress, the people, old and young, men, women, and children, continued to bring their offerings until those in charge of the work found that they had enough and even more than could be used, and Moses caused to be proclaimed throughout the camp, "Let neither man nor woman make any more work for the offering of the sanctuary." So the people were restrained from bringing the murmurings of the Israelites and the visitations of the Elohim's judgment because of their sins are recorded as a warning to after generations, and their devotion, their zeal, and liberality are an example worthy of imitation. All who love the worship of Elohim and prize the blessing of his sacred presence will manifest the same spirit of sacrifice in preparing a house where he may meet with them. They will desire to bring to the Yahweh an offering of the very best that they possess. A house built for Yahweh should not be left in debt, for he is thereby dishonored, and an amount sufficient to accomplish the work should be freely given. That the workmen may be able to say, as did the builders of the tabernacle, "Bring no more offerings." The tabernacle was so constructed that it could be taken apart and borne with the Israelites in all their journeying. It was therefore small, being not more than 55 feet in length and 18 in breadth and height, yet it was a magnificent structure. The wood employed for the building and its furniture was that of the acacia tree, which was less subject to decay than any other to be obtained at Sinai. The walls consisted of the upright boards set in silver sockets and held firm by pillars and connecting bars, and all were overlaid with gold, giving to the building the appearance of solid gold. The roof was formed of four sets of the curtains, the innermost of the fine twined linen and blue and purple and scarlet with a cherubim of cunning work. The other three, respectively, were of goat's hair, ram's skin dyed red, and seal skin sword ranged as their fourth complete protection. The building was divided into two apartments by a rich and beautiful curtain or veil suspended from gold-plated pillars, and a similar veil closed the entrance of the first apartment. These, like the inner covering which formed the ceilings, were of the most gorgeous colors, blue, purple, and scarlet, beautifully arranged, while interwrought with the threads of gold and silver were cherubim who represent the angelic host, who are connected with the work of the heavenly sanctuary and who are ministering spirits unto the people of Elohim on earth. The sacred tent was enclosed in an open space called the court, which was surrounded by the hangings or screens of the fine linen, suspended from the pillars of brass. The entrance to this enclosure was at the eastern end. It was closed by the curtains of the costly material and beautiful workmanship, though inferior to those of the sanctuary, the hangings of the court being only about half as high as the walls of the tabernacle. The building could be plainly seen by the people without. In the court and nearest the entrance stood the brazen altar of the burnt offering. Upon this altar were consumed all the sacrifices made by fire unto Yahweh, and its horns were sprinkled with the atoning blood. Between the altar and the door of the tabernacle was a laver, which was also of brass made from the mirrors that had been the freewill offerings of the women of Israel. At the laver, the priests were to wash their hands and their feet whenever they went into the sacred apartments or approached the altar to offer a burnt offering unto Yahweh. In the first apartment, our holy place, were the table of the showbread, the candlestick or lampstand, and the altar of the incense. The table of showbread stood on the north. With its ornamental crown, it was overlaid with pure gold. On this table, the priests were each Sabbath to place 12 cakes arranged in two piles and sprinkled with the frankincense. The loaves that were removed, being accounted holy, were to be eaten by the priest. On the south was the 7-branch candlestick with the 7 lamps. Its branches were ornamented with exquisitely wrought flowers, resembling lilies, and the whole was made from one solid piece of gold. There being no windows in the tabernacle, the lamps were never all extinguished at one time, but shed their light by day and by night. Just before the veil separating the holy places from the most holy, and the immediate presence of Elohim, stood the golden altar of incense. Upon this altar, the priest was to burn incense every morning and evening. That's at the third hour in the morning, and at the ninth hour, I believe, in the evening. So the ninth hour, 3 hours before sundown, is called evening time. The last 3 hours is called evening time. The first 3 hours after mid-noon is called afternoon. Then it's evening time. After the afternoon is over with, it lasts 3 hours, and it's after evening. Its horns were touched with the blood of the sin offering, and it was sprinkled with blood upon the great day of the atonement. The fire upon this altar was kindled by Elohim himself and was sacredly cherished. Day and night, the holy incense diffused its fragrance throughout the sacred apartment and without far around the tabernacle. Beyond the inner veil was the Holy of Holies, where centered the symbolic service of the atonement and intercession, and which formed the connecting link between heaven and earth. In this apartment was the ark, a chest of acacia wood, overlaid within and without with gold, and having a crown of gold about the top. It was made as a depository for the tables of stone upon which Elohim himself had inscribed the Ten Commandments. Hence it was called the Ark of Elohim's Testament, or the Ark of the Covenant, since the Ten Commandments were the basis of the covenant made between Elohim and Israel. The cover of the sacred chest was called the Mercy Seat. This was wrought of one solid piece of gold, and was surrounded by a golden cherubim. Let's read that again. This was wrought of one solid piece of gold and was surmounted by the golden cherubim, one standing on each end. One wing of each angel was stretched forth on high, while the other was folded over. The body is in token of the reverence and humility. The position of the cherubim with their faces turned toward each other and looking reverently downward toward the ark represented the reverence with which the heavenly hosts regard the law of Yahweh and their interest in the plan of the redemption. Above the mercy seat was the Shekinah, the manifestation of the divine presence. And from between the cherubim, Yahweh made known his will. Divine messages were sometimes communicated to the high priest by a voice from the cloud. Sometimes a light fell upon the angel at the right to signify approval or acceptance, or a shadow or cloud rested upon the one at the left to reveal disapproval or rejection. The law of Elohim enshrined within the ark was a great rule of the righteousness and judgment. That law pronounced death upon the transgressor, but above the law was a mercy seat upon which the presence of Yahweh was revealed, and from which, by virtue of the atonement, pardon was granted to the repentant sinner. Thus, in the work of Yasser for our redemption, symbolized by the sanctuary service, mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. No language can describe the glory of the scene presented within the sanctuary. The golden plated walls reflecting the light from the golden candlestick, the brilliant hues of the richly embroidered curtains with the shining angels, the table, and the altar of the incense glittering with the gold, beyond the second veil, the sacred ark with its mystic cherubim, and above it, the holy Shekinah, the visible manifestation of the Yahweh's presence, all but a dim reflection of the glories of the temple of Yahweh in heaven, the great center of the work for man's redemption. A period of about half a year was occupied in the building of the tabernacle. When it was completed, Moses examined all the work of the builders, comparing it with the pattern shown him in the mount and the directions he had received from Yahweh, as Yahweh had commanded. Even so had they done it. And Moses blessed them with eager interest. The multitudes of Israel crowded around to look upon the sacred structure. While they were contemplating the scene with reverent satisfaction, the pillar of cloud floated over the sanctuary and descended, enveloped it, and the glory of Yahweh filled the tabernacle. There was a revealing of the divine majesty, and for a time even Moses could not enter. With a deep emotion, the people beheld the token that the work of their hands was accepted. There were no loud demonstrations of rejoicing. A solemn awe rested upon all. But the gladness of their hearts welled up in tears of joy, and they murmured low, earnest words of gratitude that Elohim had condescended to abide with them. By the divine direction, the tribe of Levi was set apart for the service of the sanctuary. In the earliest times, every man was a priest of his own household. In the days of Abraham, the priesthood was regarded as the birthright of the eldest son. Now, instead of the firstborn of all Israel, Yahweh accepted the tribe of Levi for the work of the sanctuary. By this signal honor, he manifested his approval of their fidelity, both in adhering to his service and in executing his judgment, when Israel apostatized in their worship of the golden calf. Their priesthood, however, was restricted to the family of Aaron. Aaron and his sons alone were permitted to minister before the Yahweh. The rest of the tribe was entrusted with the charge of the tabernacle and its furniture, and they were to attend upon the priest in their ministration, but they were not to sacrifice, to burn incense, or to see the holy things till they were covered. In accordance with their office, a special dress was appointed for the priest. Thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron thy brother, for glory and for beauty, for the divine direction to Moses. The robe of the common priest was of white linen and woven in one piece. It extended nearly to the feet and was confined about the waist by a white linen girdle embroidered in blue. Purple and red. A linen turban or mitre completed his outer costume. Moses at the burning bush was directed to put off his sandals, for the ground whereon he stood was holy. So the priests were not to enter the sanctuary with shoes upon their feet. Particles of dust cleaving to them would desecrate the holy place. They were to leave their shoes in the court before the entering the sanctuary, and also to wash both their hands and their feet before ministering in the tabernacle or at the altar of burnt offering. Thus was constantly taught the lesson that all defilement must be put away from those who would approach into the presence of Yahweh. The garments of the high priest were of costly material and beautiful workmanship befitting his exalted station. In addition, for the linen dress of the common priest, he wore a robe of the blue, also woven in one piece. Around the skirt it was ornamented with the golden bells and pomegranates of blue, purple, and scarlet. Outside of this was the ephod, a shorter garment of gold, blue, purple, scarlet, and white. It was confined by a girdle of the same color, beautifully wrought. The ephod was sleeveless, and on its gold embroidered shoulder pieces were set two onyx stones bearing the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. Over the ephod was the breastplate, the most sacred of the priestly vestments. This was of the same material as the ephod. It was in the form of a square measuring a span and was suspended from the shoulders by a cord of blue from the golden ring. The border was formed of a variety of precious stones, the same that formed the 12 foundations of the city of Yahweh. Within the border were 12 stones set in the gold arranged in the rows of four and like those in the shoulder pieces engraved with the names of the tribes. Yahweh's direction was, Aaron shall bear the names of the children of Israel and the breastplate of the judgment upon his heart when he goeth in unto the holy place for a memorial before the Yahweh continually. So Yahshua, the great high priest, pleading his blood for the before the Father in the sinner's behalf, bears upon his heart the name of every repentant believing soul, says the psalmist, I am poor and needy, yet Yahweh thinketh upon me. At the right hand and left of the breastplate were two large stones of great brilliancy. These were known as Urim and Thummim. By them the will of Elohim was made known through the high priest. When questions were brought for decision before the Yahweh, a halo of light encircling the precious stone at the right was a token of the divine consent or approval, while a cloud shadowing the stone at the left was an evidence of the denial or disappropriation. The mitre of the high priest consisted of the white linen turban, having attached to it by a lace of blue, a gold plate bearing the inscription, Holiness unto Yahweh. Everything connected with the apparel and deportment of the priest was to be such as to impress the beholder with a sense of the holiness of Yahweh, the sacredness of his worship, and the purity required of those who came into his presence. Not only the sanctuary itself, but the ministration of the priest was to serve unto the example and shadow of heavenly things. Thus it was of the great importance, and the Yahweh through Moses gave the most definite and explicit instruction concerning every point of this typical service. The ministration of the sanctuary consisted of the two divisions, a daily and a yearly service. The daily service was performed at the altar of the burnt offering in the court of the tabernacle and in the holy place, while the yearly service was in the most holy place. And that's the atonement, and that's the day that we are observing right now. It's on this very day. No mortal eye but that of the high priest was to look upon the inner apartment of the sanctuary. Only once a year could the priest enter there, and that after the most careful and solemn preparation with the trimming, he went in before Yahweh, and the people in reverent silence awaited his return, their hearts uplifted in earnest prayer for the divine blessing. Before the mercy seat, the high priest made the atonement for Israel, and in the cloud of glory, Yahweh met with him. His stay here beyond the accustomed time filled them with fear, lest because of their sins or his own, he had been slain by the glory of the Yahweh. For the daily service consisted of the morning and evening burnt offering, the offering of sweet incense on the golden altar, and the special offerings for the individual sins. Every morning and evening a lamb of a year old was burned upon the altar with the appropriate meat offering, thus symbolizing the daily consecration of the nation unto the Yahweh. And there, a constant dependence upon the atoning blood of Yahshua, Yahweh expressly directed that every offering presented for the service of the sanctuary should be without blemish. The priests were to examine all animals brought as a sacrifice, and were to reject every one in which a defect was discovered. Only an offering without blemish could be a symbol of his perfect purity. who was to offer himself as a lamb without blemish and without spot. For the Apostle Paul points unto these sacrifices as an illustration of what the followers of Yahshua are to become. He says, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of Yahweh, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable unto Yahweh, which is your reasonable service. So I'm going to ask our brother, Alan DeLong, you're not at the place where Yahweh has chosen to place his name to begin with. And so do you think that when you approach unto the altars at the ninth hour of the day for the offering of getting your sins blotted out, do you think that you believe that they're going to be blotted out? You and all of those that are taken of the service with you over at your place today? I mean, is that what you really believe? You're really, by faith, expecting that to happen. Well, I have news for you. It's not going to happen. It will not happen, and once you hear this message, it did not happen to you all. None of you got your sins blotted out on this Day of Atonement. And I'm so sad to have to report that. Because Yahweh sent me on a special mission in person to your place, Alan, last evening, the evening of the Atonement. And he gave me the message to deliver to you all. I delivered the message. And he told me, and I said, well, the Holy Spirit's presence is definitely not here. It is definitely not here. I have it in my heart, and it tells me the only place for me to be is back at my place where he chose to place his name. So this is the only place that his presence will be felt, is at my place where he chose to place his name. And so I got back to my home this morning at 15 minutes before the third hour, the sacred hour, began, to have the sacred hour with my wife, which is more important. And so he said, you delivered your message that I give you. And he says, my presence will be at the place where I choose to place my name. And those that are gathered there, complying with all the ordinances of the sanctuary for this occasion, will have their sins blotted out. And so by faith, my wife and I are by faith believing that this will be a successful day for us. But I'm so sad to report that all the evidence from the scriptures and from the evidence that has been accumulated over the years with our brother Alan and his new wife and the people that was there with him, they are being misled, they are misguided, they are being taught wrong, and it's because they don't have the unction of the Holy Spirit with inspiration given. True understanding. They have a lot of knowledge. Y'all have a lot of knowledge, Alan. Tremendous amount of knowledge, but you have very little understanding. And that's bad. You can go to Proverbs and read all about that. Let us continue on. We are to give ourselves to the service of Yahweh, and we should seek to make the offering as nearly perfect as possible. Yahweh will not be pleased with anything less than the best we can offer. Now, in Malachi chapter 3, Alan, it says, will a man rob Yahweh? And he says, even this whole nation has robbed me. The whole nation of Israel. Now, I want to turn to Malachi 3 now, and I want to read that. About that, bring you all the tithes into the storehouse. Malachi chapter 3. I'm giving this as an illustration of what would happen to anyone that practices the same thing that Alan has practiced for the last many, many years. and that's marching to his own drumbeat. And it's so sad. I mean, my heart's sad. It's not happy. And I hate to have to tell the truth, but I have to tell the truth on this thing. And I have to tell the truth on it. And Yahweh, that's the only thing he will allow me to do is tell the truth. Because if I don't, well then it'll come back upon my own head. And I have been in the business since 1970 of telling and delivering messages for Yahweh to his chosen people. Starting with Brother Johnson, 1970. And he said in Malachi chapter 3, "Behold, I will send my messenger." And that messenger is speaking to you right now, Elijah David. I'm the messenger of the covenant that he's speaking of here. "And he shall prepare the way before me, and Yahshua, the Son, whom you seek, shall suddenly come to his temple." Even the messenger of the covenant, Elijah David, I'll put that in, "whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, saith Yahshua of hosts." And the Son. Now this is Yahshua is talking about. He's the one. And I'm not going to be intimidated by a fallen brother that has fallen from grace to tell me that I'm using the wrong, pronouncing the sacred name wrong when I say Yahshua. Yahshua simply means in the Hebrew, the way it's spelled, means Yahweh saves. That's what it means. And through his Son. Yahweh saves through the blood of his Son. That's what it means. And I'm going to use it. I'm not going to let some fallen brother that has been deluded and deceived by a fallen woman to come in and change the sacred name. It's the first thing that Sharon did when she got her divine revelation that she was somebody important. The first thing she did was the devil tricked her into going in and changing the sacred name of the Father and the Son and inventing their own name and giving them their own self a name of a deity. Now, that kind of influence is not going to cause me to be lured away from the sure anchor that I've been anchored to for so many years. Now, it says, "Who may abide, but who may abide the day of his coming? And who shall stand when he appeareth? For he is like a refiner's fire and like fuller's soap. And he shall sit as a refiner and purify of silver. And he shall purify the sons of Levi and purge them as gold and silver, that they may offer unto the Yahweh an offering in the righteousness. Then shall the offering of the Judah and Jerusalem be pleasant unto the Yahweh, as in the days of old and as in the former years. And I will come near unto you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers, and against the idolaters, and against the false swearers, and against those that oppress the harlot in his wages, the widow and the fatherless, and that turn aside the stranger from his right." So, Alan, you're turning aside people. You're going out and trying to meet new people and even Gentiles now. And you're trying to lure them into your snare down there at Volente. And you're teaching them false doctrine and you're teaching them lies. You're teaching them things that the Bible will not back up and prophecy certainly won't back it up. And you create the place for you in the chain links of prophecy, inventing a fourth feeding pattern and so forth that the Bible just don't back up. It just don't support. And yet you're trying to lure strangers into there. And I met one of them last night, and at your place. And I just thought how pitiful. This person doesn't know that she's been lured into a snare. And but it's her own fault. She don't have to be. If she was steady, sure, self-approved, she wouldn't have to be, but these are people that don't think for themselves. They want to depend upon the mind of another one. And Vita Otis said, the one that depends upon the mind of another is sure to let it, sooner or later, to be misled and led into it, and they both together will fall into a ditch. Okay, that's what's happening down there. They're going to one day fall into a ditch. Yahweh's going to gradually withdraw His blessings, and every time I send a message to them from heaven and bring it to them, and every time they reject it, Yahweh just withdraws. He just withdraws that many more blessings from them, if indeed they have any at all. Okay. It says, and that turn aside the stranger from his right, and fear not me, said Yahweh, Yahshua, for I am the Yahshua, I change not. Therefore, you sons of Jacob are not consumed. Even from the days of your fathers, you have gone away from mine ordinances and have not kept them. Return unto me, and I will return unto you, saith the Yahshua of hosts. But you said, when shall we return? Now, Yahweh sent me down there on a special errand last night because he said that when there's still a window of hope for Alan and Elijah, which I'm in touch with him also, there's still a window of hope. You've probably got at least 6 months until the Passover 2017. But that window of hope is fast closing up, and the time is fast diminishing. It says in verse 8 of Malachi 3, will a man rob Yahweh? Question. Yet ye have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee in tithes and offering? You know, Alan, he used to pay about an average of about $1,000 a month tithes and offerings to us here in the kingdom. And since he has become deceived and deluded and led astray by this here strange woman of another race of people, of all things, that could never be preordained to fit into the chain links of prophecy to be a leader in Israel forevermore. It had to be of the seed and be able to prove it of the seed of David, of the line of the tribe of Judah. It had to be proved genealogically that they are. But yet this woman just comes along a total stranger. So Alan, he goes off and takes up with her, and now the $1,000 that he paid us for his personal blessings, for his own personal blessings, and for him and blessing the kingdom as well, he cut off his own personal blessing. He cut off the blessing for us, the tithe money, because we turn around and send money across the waters to our church in Africa to support the. As much as extra money we can afford, we send to our people in Africa. But when Alan paid us that $1,000 a month, it made it a lot easier for us to send money to Africa. There was one month we sent just about $1,000 to those people that we had to send that they needed. So that's what I'm saying. Malachi 3:9. You are cursed with a curse, for you have robbed me, even this whole nation, the Seventh-day Adventist Church and the Davidian world. Even this whole nation of Israel has robbed me. It says, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse. The storehouse is at the place where he chooses to place his name. Mount Zion at the 12th hour, the house of David, where he's placed me in charge of, is the place where he chose to place his name. And this is where you're supposed to bring all your tithes and offerings, that there may be meat in mine house. In other words, fresh provender and new truth unfolding every day from the throne of grace. Coming from the throne of grace. Alan was reading to me last night about this throne of grace. I want to go read that to you. At Alan's place last night, Alan, he read this to me, Hebrews 4:16. He said, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Alan felt very necessary to read that to me last night. And I thought, how can you come boldly to the throne of grace when you're in rebellion and you have chosen your own place where you want to go worship the Father from, and you expect the Father to honor it, even though the Father hasn't chosen that place to be worshipped from. That's like the children of Israel back then, whenever they had an evil king that built the that the children of Israel worship in the high places on altars that they built out in the groves and so forth, worshiping Baal. The king let them go, and Yahweh didn't authorize that. But the king approved of it, and the people went and did it. And they were worshiping and expecting to get mercy from the throne of grace from offering their offerings under Baal. Well, the same thing is going on down at Valente. That's the place where there's a Baal worship has been set up down there. And Alan is worshiping at the tomb of the dead prophets, referring back to them, to Moses and so forth, and reading from the laws of Moses, all these things. He says in Hebrews 4, Alan read this several scriptures to me. Yahshua is our high priest. In verse 14, Hebrews 4, seeing then that we have a great high priest that has passed into the heavens, Yahshua, the son of Elohim, let us hold fast our profession. Well, I thought, my goodness, Alan was once anchored to the solid rock here, where the Holy Spirit told me one day when I saw Alan, said, go and harvest this man into the kingdom. And I went and met the man, and I told him who I was, and I told him what I was sent there for. And he accepted it, studied our literature, and he joined the kingdom of heaven here on earth. And he was with us for 33 years in this kingdom. And one day he said, no, this wasn't it after all. Okay. But it says right here, and Alan read it to me last night, we're to hold fast unto our profession. What was he then reading that to me for? He was the one that let go of his profession. He was the one that had put his shoulder to the plow. And then he said, looking back, he said he's not fit for the kingdom. He's not worthy of the kingdom. A man putting his shoulder to the plow and having looked back. Now, I don't look back. But here he is reading to me, telling me, you got to hold fast to your profession. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So let us therefore come boldly under the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find help, a grace to help in the time of need. So I guess he thinks that throne of grace had moved on from the place where it was originally appointed by divine providence here in Liberty Hill, Texas. He thinks because he got lured away by a strange woman and was caused to believe a lie and to lose the love of the truth and go and believe in a falsehood and change direction and move out off the kingdom's campground and go and set up his own. And so he says, now this is, the Father has moved his throne of grace now here down to my place. I'm going to tell you, man can become so deceived and deluded, especially if a woman is involved, and especially if he has weaknesses toward in the flesh toward that situation. If he hadn't overcome that, then the devil knows exactly what it's going to take to lure him away. And Alan has been lured away two times by two women that were strange women that was not of the kingdom of Yahweh, ever. They came from out of nowhere, and they lured him away, and that's happened over a 33-year period of time. While he was a member of the kingdom, this all happened while he's a member of the kingdom, and he got by the first time. He escaped the first woman, and he stayed in the kingdom. And then the second woman, though, she pulled him out of the kingdom, and that's where he's at today. Well, Yahweh sent me with a heavy heart with a message, and I delivered it to him and left it to him on a CD, two hours worth of testimony. And I left it there, and then I gave him a Bible study. I had part in their Bible study. They gave me a little bit of the last part of their Bible study, and I presented the message from the Bible, and then I slept a few hours and got up and come back home. So anyway, it says, let us, okay. So now you go back to Malachi, it says, And verse 10, Malachi 3, bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, and prove me now herewith, saith Yahshua of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there may not be room enough to receive it. For that $1,000 that Allen used to pay the kingdom, tithes and offerings, average, he had to move into a bigger place when he married this strange woman. When he married her, he moved into a bigger place, and his rent went up 2/3. Instead of the $500 a month that he paid at his other place, he's now paying $1,500 a month. And so that $1,000 that he's paying us, he had to take it and put that in on his rent. He doesn't even own the property that he's pouring all that money into. So his rent increased threefold. And he robbed Yahweh of the $1,000 here up front, and he's done that now for a couple of years. And so, I mean, my goodness, to the tune of about $25,000 or $30,000, Alan has stolen directly from Yahweh and appropriated this unto his own kingdom that he has created and invented with this woman. And so, he's not able, apparently, to buy new equipment to work his job with. He's got the same equipment that I've seen him have for the last 10 or more years. And his equipment is just wore plumb out. And, so if you're not being blessed enough to replace your equipment, and what's going to happen one day when you get older and older and older, and you get where you're physically not able to go out and do the work, and you don't have the equipment anymore to do the work with, and Yahweh's not blessing you to learn a new trade, or he's not blessing you to be a worker in his kingdom. I've seen a time when Brother Alan DeLong had such good credit and such a good work ethic that he had credit card credit up to $150,000 worth of credit that he could get just on his signature. And Yahweh had blessed him that much. And he could have used that to have been self-sufficient today, but instead he went the wrong way. He lost all of that, and he's lost it all. He even ended up in jail over credit card issues that he was once blessed to the high heavens with. So I know what I'm talking about. I had to go get him out of jail because he fell from grace one time, and now he turned right around and got right back into that credit card situation that got him in trouble to begin with. And he's in it a second time, and he's 20 years older, and he's not getting any younger, and he's not getting any stronger, and the knowledge of the scriptures and prophecy has went the other way. He stopped increasing knowledge and learning of present truth, and so but he says he's rich and increased his goods and have need of nothing. He's got what he's always wanted. He said he's got what he always wanted, to be his own place and to be over his own place, without having to answer nobody. And so that's where the problem is at today, with the whole world, not with just this one situation, but with the whole world. And I point this out because Yahweh showed me where, even at this, all of this, that this brother still has a chance to recover himself and all those that he has been connected with. And I called our brother Elijah that's been with us for 7 years. I called him, and Yahweh says he has a second chance to come in. And I told him, I said, your window of hope is only about 6 months is all it is. But I said, at least know that you've got that, and you can recover yourself, all of you. So that's where we're at today, and so I stand by that. The Bible says, have I become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Well, this is not... this is a thankless job that I have when it comes to doing stuff like that. But I have to do what Yahweh tells me to do. So in page 353 of Patriarchs and Prophets of Tabernacle and Services, it says, in the offering of the incense, the priest was brought more directly into the presence of Yahweh than in any other act of the daily ministration. As the inner veil of the sanctuary did not extend to the top of the building, the glory of Elohim, which was manifested above the mercy seat, was partially visible from the first apartment. When the priest offered incense before the Yahweh, he looked toward the ark, and as the cloud of incense arose, the divine glory descended upon the mercy seat and filled the most holy place, and often so filled both apartments that the priest was obliged to retire to the door of the tabernacle. As in that typical service, the priest looked by faith to the mercy seat with a cloud which he could not see, so the people of Elohim are now to direct their prayers to Yeshua, their great high priest, who, unseen by the human vision, is pleading in their behalf in the sanctuary above. Okay, for the incense ascending with the prayers of the Israel represents the merits and intercession of the Yeshua, his perfect righteousness, which through the faith is imputed to his people, and which can alone make the worship of the sinful beings acceptable unto Yahweh. Before the veil of the most holy place was an altar of the perpetual intercession before the holy, an altar of the continual atonement. By blood and by incense, Elohim was to be approached. Now, you see that? The application of the blood on a daily basis for those that need it is a continual offering of the atonement. The atonement is extended through the blood on a daily basis because they are daily atonements made with blood. By the blood and by the incense. Okay. As the priest morning and evening entered the holy place at the time of the incense, the daily sacrifice was ready to be offered upon the altar in the court without. This was a time of the intense interest to the worshipers who assembled at the tabernacle. Before entering into the presence of the Elohim through the ministration of the priest, they were to engage in the earnest searching of the heart and confession of sin. They united in silent prayer with their faces toward the holy place. Thus their petitions ascended with the cloud of the incense, while faith laid hold upon the merits of the promised Savior prefigured by the atoning sacrifice. The hours appointed for the morning and the evening sacrifice were regarded as sacred, and they came to be observed as a set time for the worship throughout the Jewish nation. And when in the latter times the Jews were scattered as captives in distant lands, they still at the appointed hour turned their faces toward Jerusalem and offered up their petitions to the Elohim of Israel. In this custom, Christians have an example for the morning and evening prayer. While Elohim condemns a mere round of ceremonies without the spirit of the worship, he looks with a great pleasure upon those who love him, bowing morning and evening to seek pardon for their sins committed and to present their request for the needed blessings. Well, upon that note, we're going to bring this study to a close because we're looking at our next service in about an hour and 15 minutes for that ninth hour of the day for the worship and blotting out of sin. So, we're going to bring this to a close. And we're going to meet you at a later time. Let us close now with a song. Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Have you been to Yahshua for the cleansing power? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you fully trusting in His grace this hour? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you washed in the blood, in the soul cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are your garments spotless? Are they white as snow? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are you walking daily by the Savior's side? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? Do you rest this moment in the crucified? Are you washed in the blood of the Lamb? are ye washed in the blood, in the soap and blood of the Lamb. Are ye garments spotless and a white snow, are ye washed in the blood of the Lamb? When the bridegroom cometh, will your robes be white? Are ye washed in the blood of the Lamb? Will your soul be ready for the mansions bright, and be washed in the blood of the Lamb? Are ye washed in the blood, in the soul cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are ye garments spotless, are they white as snow? Are ye washed in the blood of the Lamb? Lay aside the garments that are stained with sin, and be washed in the blood of the Lamb. There's a fountain flowing for the soul unclean, who be washed in the blood of the Lamb. Are ye washed in the blood, in the soul cleansing blood of the Lamb? Are ye garments spotless, are they white as snow? Are ye washed in the blood of the Lamb?